Oh, good morning. Hey, I'm Conservative Kat. Thanks so much for being here. Grab your coffee this morning. We've got a lot to cover. I do want to address this. I'm not going to Republican Day. This is one of the first years I won't be going. My good friend David Paul Blumenschein is going to be going, and he's going to join me on the show hopefully tomorrow to break it all down, what Republican Day was all about at the Illinois State Fair. I will not be going this year. Really sad about that. But next year, there's always next year, and we're going to have a breakdown of Republican Day on the Conservative Kat Show tomorrow morning, bright and early, 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. It's a daily show. Today, we are going to be talking about President Donald Trump. Is he coming for Chicago? Like I said, he can do this through the Insurrection Act. You'll hear a lot of people say that he's overstepping his power, and they'll cite there's an act that limits the power of the federal government when it comes to deploying the National Guard. Yes, there is an act out there that limits his power as president. However, D.C. is under federal control, number one. Number two, there is the Insurrection Act that he can use to go into places like Chicago, New York City to clean up the crime. So this Democrat alderman, Chicago alderman, was on Newsmax. Shocking. And he talked about how Mayor Brandon Johnson and how Governor J.B. Pritzker seems to hate the president more than criminals. And this hatred, this Trump derangement syndrome that Brandon Johnson and Governor J.B. Pritzker has, it's clouding their judgment. Crime is a nonpartisan issue. Duh. And we should always welcome the federal government when they lend out a helping hand and say, hey, we want to help you with crime issues. So we're going to be chatting a little bit about that. Is he coming for Chicago? Is he going to clean up Chicago like he's cleaning up Washington, D.C.? Plus, I want to talk about Chucky Charles. I don't know if his full name is Charles. Chuck Schumer. He is gaslighting you about the D.C. crime. He says that, oh, I go on a walk every single day and there is no such thing as D.C. crime. They constantly move the goalpost here. You'll have Democrats like Eric Swalwell who say, oh, the now that Donald Trump has control of the D.C. area, which really he just federalized the police, which is totally within his right because it's under federal jurisdiction, D.C. people say fascist, tyranny, tyrant, and I'm just like, sit down there, Becky, and drink some water, okay? Drink a cold glass of water. So Chuck Schumer, he's gaslighting everybody, saying that there's no crime in D.C., but then you have Eric Swalwell who gets out there and he says, oh, the crime in D.C. currently is President Donald Trump's fault and this is going to be their play. Any kind of crime or shooting that takes place in Washington, D.C. from here on out is going to be at the hands of Donald Trump, which is just ridiculous and stupid. And not to mention Eric Swalwell put that out like on Monday, which was the same day that Donald Trump announced that he was going to federalize the police there. So that brings me to Chuck Schumer today. We're going to be talking about how he's gaslighting you about the D.C. crime. He gets totally destroyed by Senator Mullen, who was on, I think it was Fox News, Brian Kilmeade last night. And they talked about how Chuck Schumer has a security detail. So, yes, of course, he feels safe in Washington, D.C., but the rest of you, the rest of us don't feel safe with things like No Cash Bail Safety Act here in the state of Illinois. We don't feel safe because guess what? We can't afford to hire our own security detail. We can't be our own security detail because of things like the PICA law, the Protect Illinois Communities law that Governor J.B. Pritzker signed that bans certain types of weaponry. So we're going to get to that. We're also going to be getting to saving the farm or growing bureaucracy. You know, and I'm going to be very careful with this because I absolutely love my senator, State Senator Sally Turner. She sponsored this. This is just a hot take that, you know, I think that we need to do something at a federal level when it comes to the farmland being bought up by the Chinese. Governor J.B. Pritzker, he signed this new Farmland Transition Commission law, bill into law, and it creates a Farmland Transition Commission. And really, it's a commission for young farmers ages 25 to 40. Who are hurting in the state of Illinois, specifically when it comes to trying to find out where to rent land, buy land, because it's all being bought up by Chinese for their wind and solar projects. So there is a lot of hurdles the young farming community is facing right now, and they need to navigate that, yes. But I think that the crux of the issue here is that we're selling our farmland to foreign nationals and to foreigners, and that we're providing all these tax credits and subsidies for the climate hysteria projects. And it's just BS. It's all BS. And I think that we have to deal with that. And we really shouldn't have to have something like a farmland transition commission. So the question is it saving the farm or is it growing bureaucracy? Throw your comments in the comment section. I appreciate you being here today. Good morning, Kat. Thanks for another live show. Crime is down when you stop reporting or stop counting felonies attached. Yeah, we are actually going to get to the crime statistics in Chicago, which is really funny because the medical examiner, like they say that murder is down, that homicides are down, but the medical examiner in that area, he's got people on the slab and their cause of death is not yet known. So there's like, you know, a good chunk of people who haven't had their cause of death stated yet or like solved yet. So, you know, year to date, Wire Points has some statistics and we're still leading the nation, Chicago, in murders per capita as of year to date in 2025. And we've been leading the nation. Chicago has murders per capita for like 14 years. It's something crazy like that. So Ryan, stick around. You're going to love these crime statistics coming up. Good morning. Appreciate you all being here. Smash that like button. Share this out with your friends. Be sure to subscribe. Head on over to Patriot Pump right behind me, patriotpumpenergy.com. You can get your bottle of pre-workout. It's a premium pre-workout. Use promo code ConservativeCat. Okay, so the Democrats in the left, they have totally taught us that the symptoms of Trump derangement syndrome, one symptom is this like knee-jerk negative response to anything that President Donald Trump does. So a joke that has been pretty popular that is that if President Donald Trump were to cure cancer, the Democrats would cry, they'd roll around on the floor, they'd scream at the sky until their face turned blue. And they'd say something like healthcare workers are going to be put out of a job now because Donald Trump cured cancer. So they always have like a negative knee-jerk response to whatever. It doesn't matter what the hell President Donald Trump does. They always have a negative knee-jerk response to it. So now in wake of Donald Trump's crackdown on crime in one of the most dangerous cities, the nation's capital, Washington, D.C., Democrats across the country have been siding with the criminals. As you would expect, they've always sided with criminals, but it's quite hilarious to see them out on X really going to bat for these criminals. And, you know, their true colors are showing here. And it's probably not going to get them reelected. But there are possibly other cities on the list for crackdown. Chicago, New York City, possibly. L.A., Philadelphia. Wire Points has this crime statistic. Ryan, buckle in, because here it is, Wire Points. Chicago has led the country in murders for 13 years in a row, and 14th is coming. So right now, murders to date, year to date, in 2025, we're at 240 murders. And we have a 2.7 million people population there in Chicago. Compare that to 8.5 million in New York City. And they only have 188 murders, okay, year to date. And then compare that to LA, 3.9 million people in that city. They only have 158. I mean, this is all very terrible because 240, 188, 158. This is all crazy numbers. And then Philly does have less population than Chicago, but they only have 138 murders per capita, okay? Or murders so far in the year of 2025. So 240 people have died in the city of Chicago. And like I said, we are going to get to this because the medical examiner, there are bodies on the slabs where their cause of death has not been determined. Like homicide is the cause of death. So that 240 number is probably much, much higher. And we'll get to that here in a second after I get to Raymond Lopez. Raymond Lopez, he's a Chicago City Alderman, and he's a Democrat. And I love this because he's not afraid to call out his own party. Okay. I'm not afraid to call out my own party. I'm going to do it here today. Okay. I did it yesterday. There were Republicans who voted for that stupid predatory towing bill that expanded the powers of the ICC and gave them all kinds of law enforcement authority to go in and pound tow trucks when really this wasn't even that big of a problem. If you look at it, 500, you know, the ICC came up with this study, said that 500 predatory tows were counted statewide, by the way. I want to correct that because I don't think I said that. It was mainly in the Chicago area, but the study was statewide. And it was 500 predatory tows were conducted. And by predatory tows, this is like upping the fees when you thought the fee was going to be $100 and then they turn around and charge you $500, which is fraud, by the way, and malpractice and bad business, right? And there's ways to go about that. Already, like there's already laws, consumer protection laws on the books, or a predatory tow would be somebody who tows your vehicle. You have a car seat in your vehicle and they won't let you get the car seat out of the vehicle until you pay your fine. Okay. And those are like predatory tows. That's what meets the definition of a predatory tow, something like that. And there was only 500. There's millions upon millions of cars statewide. I mean, come on now. There's 2.7 million people, I just said, in Chicago alone. And a lot of these 500 predatory tows took place in this urban area. But like, this is like a fraction of a percent. Anyway, I called out Republicans yesterday because every single one of them voted for this thing. And I'm like, isn't a Republican tenet or a platform, like, isn't our platform supposed to be less government? Okay, and pro small business, because really what this bill is going to wind up doing is going to hurt small businesses or the rural tow truck guy who, you know, rolls up on an accident scene. He's not called out to the accident, but he rolls up on it and he says, hey, can I offer you a tow? That's deemed predatory because you have to get permission to be out on the scene of the accident in order for it not to be considered predatory. You can't listen to police scanners and show up to the accident and, you know, suggest, hey, can I tow you? Can't do that because apparently that's predatory. And in some cases, these rural areas have like one tow company. Okay. So say Doug, you know, that's the guy, that's the name of our tow truck guy in my small town where I grew up. Say Doug goes out and he pulls up on an accident and then the ICC comes in and they're like, hey, Doug, you shouldn't have pulled up on that accident. We're going to impound your vehicle and we're going to say that you're a predatory tow truck driver. And all of a sudden, Doug has no tow truck, and all of a sudden, the town of Braidwood has no tow truck driver. So, yeah, shame on Republicans, and I do it all the time. I'm so glad when Democrats do it to their own as well. Raymond Lopez, he's doing it to his own party. So on Tuesday, get this, he appeared on Newsmax with Rob Schmidt Tonight. Now, full disclosure, I don't watch Newsmax all the time. I stumbled upon this on social media. Where he was discussing with the show host on Newsmax, Rob Schmidt, Trump's decision to call up the National Guard to address the city's out-of-control problem, dealing with crime. Lopez talked about the crime problem in the Windy City, Chicago, and what could help the residents there. And what he says here is actually fascinating to me. He says that Chicago doesn't need the National Guard. What they actually need is the FBI, the ATF, and many members of the federal government who can go after these cartels and go after the drug dealers and go after the human traffickers who have been operating in the city of Chicago for 20 plus years. Okay, this is what he said with the Newsmax Oaks host, the Raymond Lopez. He's a Chicago alderman and he's a Democrat. And I'm actually inclined to agree with him. National Guard is kind of more for like riots. And, you know, maybe like what's going on in D.C., it makes more sense because these are like teen takeovers. Now, the city of Chicago has an issue with that as well, where you have a bunch of like mobs of people going in, committing retail theft, which is a problem in Chicago. But it sounds like the real or a huge problem is this drug dealing and the human trafficking and the cartel activity. And he's calling on the FBI rather than the National Guard. That is what Ray Lopez wants, the alderman of Chicago. Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker, Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson. This is what he says. They are going to use their hatred for Donald Trump to say no and to say that we don't need federal intrusion and we don't want federal money, but we do want federal money. So he added again, or this guy, the alderman in the Newsmax clip, he said, "You have politicians in my own party who are enamored with dangerous criminals in our streets." And then he goes on and he says, "We should always be welcoming of the federal government's ability to maintain, to help us maintain safe communities, safe cities, and a safe country." So while the media does their due diligence and they prop up Mayor Brandon Johnson for re-election, you know, and it was reported in June that Chicago saw a 33% decrease in homicide, which is interesting, you know, within the first 6 months of 2025, which is shocking to me because I guess that 240 number is a decrease from the previous year, that same period of time over 2024. Like I said, year to date, it's 240 people have died due to homicide. They're saying that that's a 33% decrease. But here's the thing. Like I said, there's a medical examiner office report and there are 323 deaths where the manner of death is pending. Okay, and some of those could be determined as homicides. And if that's the case, then no, there's not a decrease. Okay, and this is how they manipulate the statistics and get Mayor Brandon Johnson out there. The media is doing their due diligence and trying to get him reelected. This is how they do it, by manipulating and massaging the statistics and not releasing the causes of death for 323 people in this medical examiner's office. Like, this is insane. And not to mention, they aren't denying that thefts are up from the previous year, from 2024, including misdemeanor theft, which is up by 4%. Felony theft is up by 46% since 2021. Car thefts are up 75% since 2021. So there's no denying that crime is a problem in Chicago. I mean, you have the alderman coming out and saying, like, we really need help with these cartels and with guns. Now, there's something that I really think Chicago should do, which is like ship these people to federal prisons. You wind up with a huge problem. And I forget what it's called, but it's a policy. And some states have implemented in the past where people who are charged with like drug trafficking or gun trafficking or human trafficking, what they'll do is they'll ship them to federal prisons and try to break up this relationship that they have there in the city with other criminals break up the cartels by shipping them to federal prisons. That's what needs to happen, because right now them just serving in Chicago prisons, if they wind up in prison, right? That's a big if, because we have something called the Safety Act. A lot of times criminals, they get a slap on the wrist and then they're home by lunch. Okay. They commit a crime in the morning, they're home by lunch. So if they wind up serving a prison sentence, they're serving, you know, their prison sentence here in the state of Illinois, and they're keeping those relationships with other cartel members or drug dealing members or whatever, and they're keeping this crime apparatus alive and well. And what you really need to do is kind of break that up and have them serve out their prison sentence elsewhere, and not allow them to continue their relationships here in the state of Illinois. So I think that would be a smart approach. You would obviously need the federal government to kind of coordinate that. And you need the federal government to come in. Like, we've reached a point where that's not even a question anymore. You really need the FBI at least to come in, if not the National Guard. With some of these teen takeovers, I think the National Guard would be the proper solution. So I'll push back on Ray Lopez on that. He says we don't need the National Guard, that we need the FBI. We need both. Okay, so while Washington, D.C. is a unique case in that it's a designated a federal district, the National Guard coming to Chicago could be a real thing. And the way he's going to do it, I'd imagine, Donald Trump, is by invoking the Insurrection Act. So people will say that he's not allowed to do that. He is. And he can invoke the Insurrection Act. So during his announcement on Monday that the National Guard would be deployed to Washington, D.C., President Donald Trump did mention that this could be done in other Democrat-run cities like New York and Chicago, saying, quote, "If we need to, we're going to do the same thing in Chicago, which is a disaster. The mayor there is totally incompetent. He's an incompetent man, and we have an incompletely a completely incompetent governor over there. Pritzker's incompetent. So, yeah, that could happen. And I'd imagine he'd invoke the Insurrection Act. Real quick, I want to get to a couple of comments. Good morning. I'm on my way to Republican Day. Good morning, David Paul Blumenschein. Appreciate you being here. See you tomorrow, 7 a.m. Yes. Glad that David is going to be joining us. He's going to break down Republican Day. I can't wait to hear what all the Republicans, what kind of lip service they provide at the Republican Day. I'm not going this year. I usually go every single year. I'm not going this year. Every major city should be federalized until they clean up the crime. Democrats will never learn. That is what Ryan says. Yes, and they can. So this is a really crucial point. You're going to get your lib friends who say he can't do this, and then they're going to cite, there's an act. I got to look up the name of this certain act, and it does limit the powers of the president when it comes to like using the National Guard and deploying the National Guard and federal resources domestically. There are limitations on him. However, the Insurrection Act, and I believe we are under attack and there is an insurrection in our cities due to the crime. I believe that, yes, there is definitely a cause for him to invoke the Insurrection Act. And I think he's going to do it through that. Okay, so if we're going to do the same thing in Chicago, which is a disaster, by the way, I think that we also have to deploy, you know, the FBI, ATF, which I really hate that bureaucracy. I think that it just needs to be dismantled. The FBI is plenty capable of handling gun crimes, which, I mean, it's just crime, right? Criminals doing crime with guns. Like, why do we need a separate ATF or bureaucracy for that? Let's just have the FBI investigate. Anyway, the FBI should be coming out and working alongside our law enforcement in Chicago and cracking down on the human trafficking. These are federal crimes, like human trafficking is a federal crime, drug trafficking, you know, anything across state lines, weapons trafficking, right? So that's all federal crimes. They should be working with the feds anyway on that. So Raymond Lopez, he stated that crime should, of course, be a nonpartisan issue. But he also pointed out one thing that is more important to both Mayor Brandon Johnson and Governor J.B. Pritzker, and that's federal money. Okay, so I don't know. They're kind of in this game of chicken right now, and that might be one thing that Donald Trump can use to get Johnson and Pritzker to pay attention and to start to play ball with him, okay? Raymond Lopez, he said, and I think that at the end of the day, that's going to give Donald Trump leverage over the city of Chicago, the county of Cook, and the state of Illinois, because 22% of our budget comes from the federal government. And I think he's going to be able to play that card to them and say, hey, if you want that money, then we're coming in, okay? And you have to work with us. like, if you want that money, we're coming with it, and the federal government is going to crack down on this crime, and you have to allow us to do that. So, yeah, 22% of our state budget, by the way, is federal dollars. So he's got this big old card in his back pocket, Donald Trump, that he could play. Brandon Johnson, Governor J.B. Pritzker, they have to decide at this point what they love more, criminals or the government money. And I don't know. Really, let's pay this or say this for what it is. Do they love voters or government money more? Because this whole dedication thing to criminals and the criminal justice nonprofit organizations and the crime reform nonprofit organizations, really, that's just buying votes. For example, there was this Peacekeepers Initiative, which really like grinds my gears, and I like clench my jaw every single time I mention this. The Peacekeepers Initiative, this is one of those criminal justice reform initiatives, and it's a nonprofit organization. Several of them who were in charge of administering or launching this initiative, and it was just a complete disaster. Millions of dollars, taxpayer dollars, were spent on this. And the Peacekeepers, essentially what they were ex-convicts, and I'm not talking like jaywalked convicts, okay? I'm talking like hard time for murder. You know, in one case, there was this guy who murdered somebody, served a 10-year prison sentence, was out. He was an ex-con, got involved in the Peacekeepers Initiative. The Peacekeepers Initiative paid $200 a day for these ex-cons to go out there essentially in safety vests and start playing counselor with hard criminals. And actually what happened, there was a story that I brought to you here, and it's in the archives. I forget the guy's name, but he like essentially curb stomped, pulled somebody out of his car, curb stomped him. He was a peacekeeper wearing a peacekeeper vest. Okay. And, you know, these people are getting paid $200 a day. And really what that is, that's buying votes. Okay. Of these people who tend to be impoverished, tend to be in these really rough areas, and they're buying votes. And, you know, hey, we give you $200 a day. All we ask in exchange is for you to vote for us, right? I'd imagine that's how a lot of these initiatives go. $200 a day, and then he is supposed to actually be out there keeping the peace, and guess what he does? He's actually in this peacekeeper vest and caught on video pulling somebody out of his car, curb stomping him, and busting up his face so bad to where he needed like reconstruction surgery of his face. So that is where your tax dollars are going, by the way, for things like peacekeeper initiatives. So when they act like they love these criminals, really what they're doing, they're trying to buy votes. And the people who work in these criminal justice nonprofit organizations, they are in debt, essentially, because their jobs are taxpayer funded. And, you know, they wouldn't get that money if it's not for their votes. It's essentially like a, you know, hey, we'll give you the taxpayer funds to work on your mission. Insert nonprofit, insert mission here. We'll give you the money if you vote for us, essentially. So, yeah, they have to really decide if they love criminals or government money, what they love more. So it's fun watching these Democrat officials taking the bait, really, from President Donald Trump. They're taking the bait because many on social media, like Eric Swalwell, are complaining about the federal cleanup of D.C. and they're warning that this is going to happen in New York City, Chicago, Baltimore. Baltimore is really disgusting. I've gone to Baltimore. I've been to D.C. D.C. has a really big rat problem. I've heard Chicago is like the rattiest city. Now, shockingly, when I go to visit Chicago, I don't see a whole lot of rats. In D.C., they're a big problem. So they're up next. New York City, Chicago, they could be up next, and they're going to invoke likely the Insurrection Act. That's how they're going to deploy the feds there or the National Guard. Really, he doesn't have to do any of that. He could just, you know, force JB and Brandon Johnson via the federal tax dollars. He could just force them to allow the FBI to cooperate with the law enforcement, which they should be doing already. I'm shocked that they're not. According to Ray Lopez, that's what he says needs to be done, is that the feds, like the FBI and the ATF, need to be working with law enforcement to combat these cartels, drug traffickers, and things like that. So taking the side of crime for these Democrats on social media, like Eric Swalwell, yesterday we talked about Jamie Raskin, and now Chuck Schumer, like this is not going to help you in your next election. Like, honestly, you're setting them up. Donald Trump is baiting them and setting them up to take a loss in the next election, because everybody can agree that crime is a nonpartisan issue. And it's clear your TDS is getting in the way of you making the city safe for me, your constituent. So the left's soft on crime policies have wreaked havoc on America. I do want to shift gears, smash that like button, share this out with your friends. What does the Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms Division, what's their purpose? It's an old school police force that really has no purpose today. Exactly. And I said that the ATF, I mean, really, there is no purpose for it. It's so dated. It should just be dismantled. And really the goal of it should, it's a federal agency and, you know, alcohol and tobacco legalized. So I don't even know why they're like ATF policing that. Really, it's just guns at this point. And there's no reason why the FBI can't deal with gun trafficking or weapons trafficking. with local law enforcement. So there's really no need for the ATF. There were promises, campaign promises, I think, about dismantling the ATF, like the Department of Education. There's like entire state agencies that just aren't worth it. So I hope eventually, you know, in Trump's term here, that he takes a long look at the ATF, and or at least the Republicans in Congress take a look at ATF and just dismantle it. They could do that tomorrow if they keep the majority. I think that's going to probably happen after 2026 election, though. Maybe they look at that, dismantling the ATF. Anyway, let's shift gears. Well, I do want to talk about this from a biblical perspective, okay? The crime that's going on in these cities, okay? Democrats rejecting help just because it's coming from Donald Trump. I can't help but think of this verse, and I was in the Word today, and I pulled this verse, Proverbs 29:8. Scoffers set a city aflame, but the wise turn away wrath. So Chicago is on fire with crime, okay? But its leaders are too proud to take water from the wrong bucket. In the Bible, there's this leper. There's a story. Naaman is his name. He's a leper. And he refuses to wash in the Jordan because it didn't fit his expectations. Okay, but his servant said, quote, if the prophet had told you to do something great, wouldn't you have done it? So pride nearly kept this leper from being healed in the Jordan. Okay, so today's political pride, this is Governor J.B. Pritzker and Brandon Johnson, it's keeping our cities from being safe. They are dealing with pride. And sometimes God helps us through very unexpected people. And it's unfortunate that Brandon Johnson and Governor J.B. Pritzker, their pride is blinding them, essentially. Your help could come from a guy who you don't really like and can't stand, and he's a president of a party who you don't like, okay? This is an unexpected form of help, but don't be too prideful to not take the help, okay? And to not work with the guy, okay? The ability of Democrats to lie, by the way, without any kind of regard. I mean, they just lie right through their teeth. I'm surprised that they don't randomly combust or set themselves, like, are set on flames. Okay, these people lie like the Wicked Witch of the West. The way they lie, you know, they just blatantly outright lie. And this brings me to Chuck Schumer this morning, and truly they've perfected it. It's like a performance. It's an art form, the ability to lie straight to a camera and not like get nervous. Like me, if I lied, I get like very nervous and like twitchy when I lie. These people have perfected it, and I'm shocked that they don't just combust like the Wicked Witch of the West when they lie like that. And this brings me to Chuck Schumer, but also I want to talk about Democrat Max Frost. Okay, so Maxwell Frost, he's a young guy in Congress. Him and Eric Sorensen seem to be good pals. But he was on CNN recently. Eric Sorensen is in the 17th Congressional District, by the way. He was on CNN, and then he posted a video on X of his appearance and of the discussion that he had with Scott Jennings on CNN. Now, of course, this is edited and jump cut, similar to that. You guys remember when Joe Biden, I think he addressed the nation, and there was this brutal jump cut. Okay, they clearly edited it. But this is a very edited version of the discussion he had with Scott Jennings on CNN. So it's very clickbaity, not exactly truthful. I'm not going to play the unedited version today. I didn't even bother looking for it because the edited version, full of jump cuts, right, and not actual context. I mean, I can shut down Max Frost here with fact-based argument. This guy doesn't make a fact-based argument, even in this super edited clip with jump cuts and no actual context. I can shut him down because really what he makes here is an emotional plea about guns Take a listen.
Republicans aren't for illegal guns. Republicans are for responsible gun ownership.
Why is Donald Trump completely gutting the Bipartisan Safer Communities Act, the parts of it that support law enforcement, the parts of it that support the entire federal government working together with local law enforcement on crime, illegal gun statistics, on intelligence on guns, illegal gun trafficking, cracking down on these guys? Why is Donald Trump undoing all of that from A to Z?
Well, I don't know that that's true. Republicans are for legal gun ownership. Of course,
well,
we believe in the Second Amendment.
Toss it aside and move
well, you're making an allegation, and I don't know that it is true. I don't support.
Then why is Donald Trump getting
Republican
rid
support
of all the programming,
legal gun ownership,
all the funding in the Bipartisan Safer Communities Act, which is the reason why the last 3 years
the issue in D.C.
gun violence
people.
Has gone down the most
it's
we've seen
people.
In the history of this country. We still have a lot of work
violent
to do. People still feel
but,
not safe,
let me just
but there's still work to do.
Republicans aren't for illegal guns.
Of course, we're not for illegal guns, but there's no really such thing, in my opinion, as illegal guns. There's illegal activity you can perform with a gun. Okay, so Republicans aren't for illegal activity, period. Okay, whether that's done with a gun, a knife, it doesn't really matter. If you hurt somebody without it being in self-defense, which is one of the only reasons why you would hurt somebody and it be legally justified in self-defense. If you hurt somebody, with intention or kill somebody with intention because you're a crap human being, yeah, we're against that. Okay. Biblically, conservative Christians who tend to be Republican are against that because biblically, thou shalt not murder. Okay. Like I said, I'm not going to bother looking for the unedited version of that clip. He obviously jump cutted it, edited it out, made an emotional argument here. This was not a fact-based argument. Frost, he didn't mention the type of guns that are being used in Washington, D.C. and in Chicago are mostly handguns. Chicago, there's tons of gun-free zones. Washington, D.C. is a gun-free zone. Yet the criminals, they are ignoring all of the laws that are passed, okay? Chicago, some of the most crazy gun laws. I mean, the state of Illinois has the craziest gun laws, I say, in the nation. Just recently, Governor J.B. Pritzker signed a law to go into effect where you can't even have a gun on a coffee table anymore, right? So, they're trying to police guns even in your own home and how you store them. They want you to store them in a lockbox 3 bedrooms away, okay, where it's not going to do you any good if there's an intruder. Okay? So, we have the most insane gun laws. There's gun-free zones everywhere in Chicago. Washington, D.C. is a gun-free zone. And, they're breaking the law because they're criminals. Okay, it has nothing really to do with the guns. Apparently, the criminals are ignoring the law as well as the law they're breaking with that gun. Okay, so they ignore the gun laws. They ignore the gun-free zones. They ignore the other law, whatever law they're breaking with that gun, whether that's shooting at somebody or, pistol whipping somebody, who knows. Whatever laws that they're breaking, they're ignoring those laws on top of the gun laws. Okay, so Democrats, they never bother to make a fact-based argument. They deflect and they flat out lie. Okay. So on the top of the food chain of liars, that brings me to Chuck Schumer today. Oh, Chuck. Trump is out there trying to push for a safer DC, and Schumer, he had one of these wicked witch of the West lies. I like to say, that about these politicians is, they have these lies that are just so blatant, and I'm shocked that they don't just combust like the Wicked Witch of the West. But this was on a podcast. Chuck Schumer was on a podcast, and I was watching Fox News. Brian Kilmeade, he was filling in for Laura Ingraham, and the podcast clip was featured on Fox News. So here's what the podcast host says. He goes, "Are you scared of walking around in Washington, D.C. there, Chuck?" And he says, "No, I walk around all of the time. I get up early in the morning sometimes. I take a nice walk. The sun is rising around the Capitol and other monuments and things. I feel perfectly safe." Look, here's what they've done, Aaron, plain and simple. Donald Trump wants us to be distracted. His game plan, this is his MO during his first term in his presidency. And now it's a distraction, a lot of things, but above all, it's Epstein. So he's like all the Democrats are saying nowadays that it's all about Epstein and he's distracting from Epstein. And this fella, you know, he's always in the comment section every morning. Good morning. I appreciate you being here. And he says, you know, I'm protecting a pedophile or I'm a pedophile defender. Donald Trump is not a pedophile defender. I've gone through this several times. Pam Bondi, the FBI, the Attorney General's office, okay, they are not the ones to declassify those court-sealed documents. I really think that it ought to come from the intelligence community, Tulsi Gabbard. These are court-sealed documents, even the judges. I don't even think that President Donald Trump is able to see these things, okay? So I don't think he really knows who's on the Epstein client list, okay? This is just a very tired, dead horse. They are pushing the leftist about Donald Trump and Jeffrey Epstein. I want to see the client list just as much as everybody else. But we have to fight our intelligence communities to release those sealed court documents. I don't think it's up to President Donald Trump, really, or Pam Bondi or Kash Patel at the FBI or Dan Bongino. I think that they've done everything that they can do. At this point, we're waiting on these court-sealed documents, and they are trying to go about this other way. So the FBI and Attorney General Pam Bondi, they have been working with Ghislaine Maxwell to try to release the names or get her to release names of the people she trafficked the humans to. Okay, we want to know who did Jeffrey Epstein traffic the humans to. And they are working with Ghislaine Maxwell trying to cut a deal, which the left is crazy about. That happens all of the time. I don't want Ghislaine Maxwell. Okay, I want the people who she trafficked the humans to. Okay, because she was really just a pawn in all of it. Jeffrey Epstein, he got what was coming to him. I don't think he killed himself in his cell. Okay, but in the end, he's dead. Okay, so justice has been served there. And now I want justice to be served when it comes to who did Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell traffic those humans to. I think Ghislaine Maxwell was a pawn in all of it. I don't think that she was the puppeteer. Okay, I think that she was just a puppet in all of it. And I don't care if she, you know, has a lower prison sentence or her sentence is even at this point, if we're going to get some good names, I don't care if she doesn't serve a single day. I think that we need the names of the people who actually harmed these young girls used these young girls. I want those names. And those might be the names of bankers, people, CEOs of banks. And if you start cuffing CEOs of banks globally or prime ministers of foreign countries, if that's really how deep this thing goes, do we want to go there? And that is a question that President Donald Trump will have to answer, I think. And that question would ultimately go before President Donald Trump. Do we want to go there? And will that cause global economic collapse? So I'm really tired of talking about this. Like that is where we're at right now. And you're just going to have to shut up and be quiet, Chuck Schumer and leftist in my comments. Like, you're just going to have to sit down, shut up, and wait for these court-sealed documents to be unsealed. This has nothing to do with President Donald Trump. He's not a pedo, and he's not concealing the client list because he's on it. Okay? It has nothing to do with President Donald Trump, absolutely nothing. And in fact, had it not been for President Donald Trump, Jeffrey Epstein would not have been behind bars. Okay, Brian Kilmeade, he was filling in for Laura Ingraham, and he was doing a bit about that Schumer podcast. And I do want to play this podcast for you, just a small clip of it. Let me fast forward here to where they start talking about the crime. Yeah, here we go. I'm going to share. This is the clip, the podcast that I was referencing, where the host and Schumer, they were chatting about the DC crime, and Schumer sat there like, and I don't even know how he was able to do this without like laughing and like just outright laughing, because he said this with a straight face that DC is totally fine and that he goes on these lovely sunrise walks every single morning, and he has these nice little walks in the morning. Take a listen. Oh, it would help if you could hear it. Am I right? Here we go.
everything that's happening in DC. But first, a lot of folks on the Republican side, your Republican colleagues, say that they are very scared to walk outside in DC, that they think this is completely the right thing to do. Senator, are you scared walking around Washington, DC these days?
I walk around all the time. I wake up early in the morning sometimes and take a nice walk as the sun is rising around some of the Capitol and the other monuments and things, and I feel perfectly safe. They're full of it. Look, here's what they've done, Aaron. Plain and simple. Donald Trump wants to distract. That's his game plan. It's been his MO for his first term in the presidency and now. So he's trying to make this a distraction. What's he trying to distract from? Well, a lot of things, but above all, Epstein. We've been confronting him on Epstein very successfully, left and right, so much so that Johnson had to dismiss, you know, had to send his house home early, and we called it the Epstein recess. We have found an arcane rule that if five members of our Homeland Security Committee demand documents, we should get them. When I really, attacked them for sending the Deputy Attorney General, Trump's lawyer, down to interview Ghislaine, they went crazy. They're feeling it, and we're not letting go. When we come back, we are going to have many more things in terms of going after them on the Epstein files. So that's what it is. It's a
going after them on the Epstein files, like I said. The deputy director, at the behest of Pam Bondi, who is part of the Trump administration, probably at the behest of Donald Trump, this was all okayed. They went to go talk to Ghislaine Maxwell and try to get her to talk and release names. Okay, so they are trying to release this client list through a different channel other than unsealing those court documents, because really that's at the behest of, I think, these intelligence agencies, and they're really pushing back on unsealing those court documents. Okay, so Brian Kilmeade, he's on with Laura Ingraham. They talked about that podcast clip, and this DC crime story. They talked about it, and Kilmeade actually had the Oklahoma senator on. His name is Mark Wayne Mullen. He had him on as a guest to kind of react to the podcast. And he asked about Schumer's claim. He asked Mullen about it, and Mullen said, quote, that there is a less than zero chance that Schumer would walk around anywhere in D.C. other than to the door of his limo. And if he is to walk around anywhere by himself, it's probably because he's the leader of the Senate, the minority leader of the Senate, and he has multiple armed Capitol Police protection detail around him 24/7. If he were to walk anywhere in DC, of course this guy is going to feel safe. It's because he's got multiple armed guards. Now, you and I, specifically here in the state of Illinois, because the gun control laws are so insane, we don't feel safe here in our state. We don't feel safe in our cities because we don't get the privilege to have an armed detail with us 24/7. We don't even get the privilege of arming ourselves. Okay. Well, the right to arm ourselves, our Second Amendment right. This isn't a privilege. It's a God-given right, and we should be able to arm ourselves. But they've taken away our God-given right, the Second Amendment, here in the state of Illinois. Chuck Schumer's got it with his armed protection detail. So Mullen pointed out that the Donald Trump and the Trump campaign, they campaigned on making DC safe again. Okay, they said it at least 20 times on the campaign trail before he became president that they were going to clean up Washington, D.C. and our left-wing cities. Okay. Now, later in this Brian Kilmeade show, Horace Cooper of Project 21 was a guest, and he was discussing the rampant crime in Washington, D.C. Cooper mentioned that it's safer in Baghdad than Washington, D.C. Kilmeade looked down at his phone and he paraphrased a text message from a member of Schumer's security detail. The officer said that Schumer's security is with the senator all day. Okay. The security is with him all day. Okay. So this was from a member of his security detail. There was a text message, and it proves that they are with him all day, and he likely doesn't even go to the bathroom without his detail, his protection detail. So when this podcast host asked Chuck Schumer, like, hey, do you feel safe in D.C.? Of course, he's going to say yes. He has an armed protection detail with him 24-7. Oh, Chucky Ducky, my favorite chef in the world. Did you hear about his new cookbook? Oh, baby, I like it raw. Yeah, so I don't know if he's... Does he have a new cookbook or is that, you know, sarcasm? I know that there's this viral picture of him out there with a raw hamburger. I mean, so out of touch with everyday people, right? He doesn't go to the bathroom without a full protection detail, okay, armed protection detail. He also doesn't know how to cook hamburgers, apparently, because he put a raw hamburger down on the grill and then put a piece of cheese in the raw hamburger before it was cooked. You're supposed to put the cheese on after, my dude. Oh, Chuck. So I'm going to take a quick break, but we're going to come back. And I do want to talk about this Senate Bill 2327. It creates the Farmland Transition Commission here in the state of Illinois. And my main question to you is this going to save the farms or is it going to grow bureaucracy? I'll be right back with that. Smash that like button. Share this out with your friends. Welcome to Conservative Cat Clips, where we deal with the truth, not talking points. I'm your host, Kat, and today we're putting a spotlight on something the abortion industry wants to keep you in the dark about. Abortion pills. What are they? How do they work? And how are they hurting women? Let's talk about the facts. Over 54% of abortions in America are now done using chemical abortion pills. That number is climbing fast. Why? Because it's easier, it's cheaper, and it's quieter. But here's what they won't tell you. Abortion pills come with a serious risk. The process is two drugs, mifepristone, which actually ends the pregnancy, and misoprostol, which forces the body to expel the baby. Sounds simple, right? It's not. According to the FDA, 4,200 serious adverse events have been reported, including 28 deaths since 2000, the year 2000. And those are just the official numbers. In 2021, there was a peer-reviewed study that found that ER visits after a chemical abortions increased by over 500% between 2002 and 2015. And here's the kicker. Many of these cases are coded as miscarriages, and they're coded as miscarriages because women don't or they can't tell the hospital what actually happened and that they actually took these pills. That means the real damage, probably much worse, so way more than 4,200 adverse events since 2000. Now brace yourself. The Biden administration made it to where these pills were accessible by the mail with no person exam, no ultrasound, and no guarantee that the pregnancy had to be an ectopic pregnancy. So, I mean, you could be taking these in your 6 months, 7 months, 8 months along. And it's not, this could be deadly if you take it when it's not an ectopic pregnancy. Women are being told to take these powerful drugs and there's zero medical supervision. That's not healthcare. It's called negligence. It's medical negligence. And we're seeing a heartbreaking stories about all these women who are bleeding alone in dorm rooms, bathrooms, parking lots, or even in their own cars in the parking lot. Clinics like Planned Parenthood calls this empowerment and empowering, but tell me how it's empowering to hand a teenager a handful of pills and say, good luck. The emotional fallout is just as real, by the way. There's a physical risk, but there's an emotional risk as well. Women reported feeling abandoned, traumatized, and even haunted by what they've done, especially when they see the tiny, tiny body of their baby passing. And passing that, it's traumatizing. And nobody tells them that they're going to see the tiny baby in the pamphlet. So here's the truth, the plain and simple truth. Abortion pills are not safe. They're not kind and they're not empowering. They actually hurt women and they silence their pain by taking these chemical abortion pills, and they protect an industry by keeping the abortion in the dark. And it doesn't do anything to protect the individual at all. I'm Kat, and this has been Conservative Clips, Cat Clips, reminding you that real healthcare, it doesn't kill people, and real healthcare means empowering women and supporting women, not selling them lies in a bottle. Stay alert, stay bold, and always choose light. This has been Conservative Cat Clips. Hey, go ahead and smash that like button. Share this out with a friend today, and be sure to subscribe to the channel. Hit the subscribe button. I do want to chat about this. And, you know, we had Ray Lopez. I talked about him. He's a Chicago alderman. He was going after members of his own party, specifically Governor J.B. Pritzker and Mayor Brandon Johnson. And he said, hey, these two guys, they're going to have to decide what they want more, federal money, or are they going to continue to hate on Donald Trump? And is their hatred too great to address the crime problem in Chicago? So, like him, I'm going to be calling out some Republicans. Republicans tend to do this, and really it's because they can't do anything much else in the state house, okay, because of the supermajority, okay? So welcome to the Conservative Cat Show, where the corn is real, the coffee is high, and the manure comes from Springfield in Washington, D.C. I'm your host, Kat, and today we are tackling a bill that sounds very wholesome, very farm fresh, but really this is just another bushel of government red tape wrapped in a shiny bow. What am I talking about? Pritzker just signed the Senate Bill 2372. This creates the Farmland Transition Commission. Okay, so this is a new state commission that is designed to help young farmers secure land, right, and to help them navigate hurdles that we put up here in the state of Illinois by our own making, help them navigate those hurdles. And it sounds like a great headline, right? The Farmland Transition Commission. It's helping young farmers in Illinois. It sounds great. It's a beautiful headline. And who could be against young farmers, right? I'm not against young farmers. But before you say amen and head to the farmers market, remember this, that this is Illinois. And in Illinois, commissions have this funny habit of turning into zombie boards or zombie commissions, okay? So they're alive on paper, but in reality, they are sucking taxpayer dollars like a vampire bat in overalls, okay? So they are sucking resources, a lot of these zombie boards and commissions. Some of them don't take taxpayer dollars, but the infrastructure to just keep them alive on paper takes taxpayer dollars. So my fear is that this will turn into yet another zombie commission. So let's break down the meat and potatoes of this thing. Or in this case, corn and soybeans of Senate Bill 2372. I'm breaking this down for you. The Farmland Transition Commission's job is a one-stop shop for young farmers ages 25 to 40 who want to rent or buy land, find grant opportunities, or get information on farm equipment. So really what this sounds like to me is like a dating service for tractors. Like, oh, what tractor do I want to buy? What is a... this is a resource for me to use. The Farmland Transition Commission is a resource for me to use to figure out what land to buy, where to buy it, what farm equipment to get. So it's kind of like a dating service for farmers. Okay, what farmland do you want to date? What equipment do you want to date? They say that legislators here in the state of Illinois say that Indiana has something similar. So I'm not totally against this. If it actually survives and it doesn't turn into a zombie board or a zombie commission, I'm not completely against it. Indiana has something similar, but it's a little different in that it's just a portal. So there's no people who exist on this commission, okay? Unlike what this commission is, it's going to be run by the folks at the Department of and created by the folks at the Department of Agriculture, the folks at DNR, Department of Natural Resources, Illinois University Extension. There's also going to be some big ag associations like the Pork Association. These are the people who are going to make up that commission. Indiana, like I said, has something similar, but it's a portal. It's all online. There's no people on it. And, you know, it makes it easier for farmers to break into farming. Okay, fine. But the catch with this one is that it's not an online portal and there's actual people sitting on it. I don't think it's going to take, you know, a ton of taxpayer resources, but I mean, the Department of Ag, you know, that is all taxpayer funded and they're in charge of keeping this kind of like staffed and chairing it and having somebody from the Department of Ag, you know, it takes their time, this commission, sit on this commission. So really what the catch is here is that there's going to be a bunch of suits in the room. Okay, for something that's really supposed to be a boots on the ground type industry. Okay, farming is boots on the ground, not suits in a room. And if you've ever tried to plant corn with a stack of government forms, you're not going to have a whole lot of luck. Okay, you're going to be plowing well past planting season. And I just don't think a bunch of suits in the room is going to be really helpful for young farmers. Okay, I think it would be less bureaucracy if we just set up like a little portal for young farmers, you know, ages 25 to 40. They're used to that. You know, they're used to the phones. If there was an app for them to go to see what grants they could apply to see what farmland is available, you know, I think that would save a whole lot of time for the people who are going to be tasked with serving on this commission anyway. Okay, so the bill sponsor, State Senator Sally Turner, says that this is urgent because Illinois farmland is disappearing fast. Not to housing, not to strip malls, but to wind and solar projects. So she says that more than 129,000 acres are already out of production for solar farms. Okay, in the state of Illinois, that is not nothing, folks. We're taking prime, beautiful farmland, the best dirt that God has ever created, and we are burying it under glass panels and turbines, many of which are linked to foreign money, foreign companies, Chinese-linked companies in some cases. So this is really, really bad stuff. And this is something that's really hard for young farmers to navigate because there's no farmland yet left for them to farm. Okay, so think about it. We're told that wind and solar are green and sustainable, but you can't eat a solar panel, right? You can't make bacon out of a windmill, okay, wind turbine. I don't even really like to call them windmills because really it's a turbine. They use gas to turn the damn thing. So you can't feed a growing population by paving over cornfields with your latest climate virtue signal, okay? So it's not really green. It's not really sustainable. And we're eating up this precious farmland. We're taking away food from the mouths of a growing population, okay? And here's where I start to ring the barn door or the barn bell. Okay. And I start to ring the bell here. This bill does not touch the real problem. If Pritzker really wants to save Illinois farmland and help out young farmers, he'd be backing a ban on Chinese nationals and companies buying up Illinois farmland. Okay, so he wouldn't be signing this bill into law. If he was serious about helping young farmers, he would hop on Mary Miller's train of banning Chinese companies and nationals buying up farmland. So especially for wind and solar projects, which aren't green, which aren't sustainable, and are really just taking food out of the mouths of the people our farmers are tasked with feeding. Okay, so we need a federal fix, and we need Governor J.B. Pritzker to work with the feds on a fix for this. Okay, China already owns and leases America farmland near sensitive military bases in several states. They're snapping up ag resources like hungry foxes in a hen house. Okay, and Illinois is ripe for the picking. Why? Because we do have very precious soil here. We've got rich soil, and they want to attack us from within, and they want us to struggle with feeding our population. They want us to struggle with farming production because they hate us. They're our enemy. They're our adversary. And, you know, unfortunately, we have a governor here who loves subsidies for these green projects. And there's a political culture here where the lobbyists, the solar lobbyists, the wind lobbyists, they have more influence than a farmer it does. They've got way more influence. They've got way more lobbyists. They've got way more money to go out and lobby. And they've got more influence than the farmers do. So that's what makes Illinois so attractive to the Chinese to build their wind farms or their solar farms. because we've got a governor that will give them all kinds of tax subsidies for these green projects, but we also have this rich soil that is really amazing for production. They don't want us to have food. They want us to rely on them. And they're trying to attack us from within by buying this all up. And it should really scare us that China is leasing and owning American farmland near military bases, sensitive military bases in several states. So Sally Turner, she swears that this commission, the Farmland Transition Commission, isn't going to go into zombie mode. Okay, but folks, we've seen this before. We've seen the horror film before. Okay, the Illinois Auditor General's report, it shows that 100 state boards and commissions are inactive. Okay, this was a report that they did a couple of years, or I think it was in 2024 report. And the active boards, this is, should shock you as well. Not only do we have over 100 state boards and commissions that are inactive, so they create the bills, they direct these departments to have a seat on these commissions. Not only is there 100 commissions out of order or like inactive and in zombie mode, but there are active commissions. And of those active commissions, only like 28% of them didn't even meet. So the active commissions, 28% of them didn't even meet the minimum number of times that they were supposed to via statute. Okay, so this commission is supposed to meet X amount of times to be considered active. And a lot of these active boards that we currently have are active commissions. They're not even meeting the minimum number of times that they're supposed to. So basically, we've got ghost committees haunting the government buildings, taking up space, drawing per diems. In some cases, these commission members get per diems, and they produce zero results. A lot of them are inactive, and they're all just ghost boards, zombie boards. You know, they don't do anything. So I'm not saying that Sally Turner isn't sincere. She says that, hey, this is going to be a priority of mine to make sure that this commission is doing what they're supposed to be doing. I'm not saying she's not sincere, but sincerity doesn't always beat the Illinois political depravity, okay, to put it lightly. There's just political depravity, and these commissions go ghost mode or zombie mode, and there's really just a ton of bureaucracy, and everything good eventually sinks into the muck and the disgustingness of bureaucracy. So this might be good and it sounds good. And I would love to help our Illinois farmers, our young farmers, and maybe it will help even just one or two, you know, for a time being. But eventually my bet is that this will sink into the muck that is bureaucracy. And, you know, you save farming. You don't save farming with another meeting and with suits in a room. You're not going to save it that way. You save it by stopping the selling off of our land and letting the farmers farm. And that's the real solution, the crux of the issue here. So the Christian worldview here, as Christians, we are told that land is a gift from God. And it's something that we should steward, not squander. Proverbs 13:22 says, a good man leaves an inheritance to his children. That inheritance isn't just money, it's land, it's resources, the ability to sustain life for generations. Okay, so us selling off our farmland in the form of subsidies to these foreign nationals and foreign companies, we are not leaving these resources, these land resources, and the ability to sustain our life here in America for generations to come. We're selling it to foreign powers for quick cash. And we trade productive farmland for climate industry pet projects. And we are squandering that inheritance when we do that. When we sell off to foreign powers for quick cash, when we trade off our productive farmland for this climate hysteria pet project baloney, we are not keeping an inheritance for the generations to come. So we're told to care for the least of these in the Bible. And friends, in this context, the least of these might be that 25-year-old farmer who's trying to get a loan for this 40 acres of land while competing against this billion-dollar conglomerate and foreign state-backed companies, CCP-backed companies. Like, we should be showing up for the 25-year-old farmer who's trying to get a loan to buy the land, okay? And we are to care for the least of these. So the least of these, that would be in this context, the 25-year-old, the young farmer who's trying to get a loan and who's going up against the big conglomerate foreign-backed companies. So what is the real solution here? Is it the Farmland Transition Commission, or is it this? Number one, I think we need to ban foreign ownership of U.S. farmland. Mary Miller has a bill out there at a federal level. We need Governor J.B. Pritzker to support this bill at a state level and be on board. We have to ban foreign ownership, and I think it starts with China, banning China from owning owning farmland, U.S. farmland, period, end of story. If you're not an American citizen, if you're not an American company, you don't get to own dirt. Our grandfathers bled to plow, okay, and worked in sweat, blood, tears to plow. You don't get it, okay, period, end of story, if you're a foreigner. Number two, we need to stop subsidizing these solar projects or wind projects that eat up prime agricultural land. If green energy companies want to play, make them use rooftops, if they want to put them on rooftops or whatever, as long as it's safe, and I don't think they are safe. A lot of these solar panels, they wind up combusting. I'm just against them entirely, but we need to leave at least our Class A soil for the crops, okay? If we're going to mess around with the climate hysteria people and these pet projects, then we've got to put them on rooftops or parking garages or something like that. Stop eating up this beautiful soil for our crops and for our food. Okay, number two. Number three, we need to cut the red tape for our young farmers directly. We don't need another commission to connect them with grants. We need to simplify and expand existing federal loan programs, improve rural banking. Here's a wild idea that people don't talk about. Hey, how about, one, we need to get rid of the death tax, the real estate tax. That is something that the farmers really hate. But we also should probably provide tax incentives for older farmers who sell and lease their land to young local producers instead of the corporate buyers. Okay, so a lot of times, there's a lot of cash thrown at these farmers to sell off their land to the Chinese companies. What we need to do is make it attractive for old farmers to sell their land to young farmers. Okay, and there's got to be ways to do that. Why don't we just give the old farmers tax incentives to sell their land to young local producers, and we incentivize them to do that rather than sell them or incentivize them to sell them to corporate buyers. Those are all real solutions. And if you will, get out your Illinois farm bureaucracy bingo card for me, because on today's card, we have the word commission, one-stop shop, modeled after Indiana. We'll study it. And this is my personal favorite. The governor's office is going to open applications soon for the Farmland Transition Commission. This is all like buzzwords. They think that this stuff is going to help, and we're not dealing with the issue at heart, the heart of the issue. Another commission to study the problems isn't going to help much. We know what the problems are. It's selling off our farmland. It's the inheritance tax or the real estate taxes, the death tax, okay? We need to cut taxes. We need to cut the red tape. We need to incentivize older farmers to sell the young local producers. I'm sure you get to fill your card here, your Illinois farming bureaucracy bingo card. First one to fill their card gets a seat on the Farmland Transition Commission. Your prize, all expenses paid, trip to a quarterly meeting where nothing gets decided and everything gets tabled until the next quarter. So a lot of these commissions, like I said, they wind up inactive. And if they do remain active, a lot of them don't even meet the full required, or meet the required amount of time for them to be considered active. And this was done by the Auditor General. So folks, this is where you come in. If you're in Illinois, you got to keep an eye on who's appointed to these types of commissions. We really need boots on the ground type people, not suits, serving on these commissions. We need to demand that they focus on actual solutions and not conduct endless studies. And if you're outside Illinois, I want you to push your congressman to support a federal ban on foreign ownership of farmland. We can't wait for Springfield to grow a spine. I think really ultimately the feds are going to be the ones who deal with the issue of the Chinese buying up our farmland and hurting our young farmers here in the state of Illinois in the process. So if you're a young farmer yourself, don't let the government be your only plan. Okay, network locally, talk to retiring farmers, look into private co-op models. You've got to think like your grandparents did, okay? If you're a young farmer, you've got to be resourceful, you got to be tough, and you can't wait for permission, okay? So in Illinois, we don't just fight weeds in the field, we fight weeds in government. Senate Bill 2372 might help some young farmers, yes, for a time. I'm not going to deny that. It might help some young farmers connect with resources that might get them the help that they need in that moment. But what we're doing in the same breath here is we're adding another new row, a shiny new row in the field of bureaucracy. This is just adding more bureaucracy to the whole thing. And the real fight isn't about creating commissions or studying the problem. It's about protecting the land from being sold out to these climate industrial complexes. That's what the real fight is all about. We have to stop selling our land out. And until we face that, no commission is going to save the farm. Like they're not going to save our farmland. And friends, for me and my house, we are going to serve the Lord and we are going to keep the land he gave us, because we have to pass that on to the next generation so that way they can sustain us in the future. All right, I got to take a quick break, but you're listening to Conservative Cat, and I will be right back. We are going to be talking about Greg Abbott and how he blasted Governor Gavin Newsom and the Texas Democrats for fleeing his state, and he has a hilarious yet brutal message for them. Greg Abbott does. I'll be right back. You're listening to Conservative Cat. Be sure to subscribe. Hit that subscribe button right now. This is Conservative Cat Clips, and this is the place where we remind you that your children come from God and they don't come from the Department of Education. The government wants to raise your kids. They want to feed them breakfast. They want to tell them about gender ideology and gender identity as young as kindergarten. They want to start them out really early. They want to tell you, your kids, how many pronouns they should have, and they want your kids to learn all the pronouns by the age of third grade. Okay. Meanwhile, they can't keep bathrooms clean in their schools. They can't keep their test scores up, reading, writing, and arithmetic. They can't keep those scores above sea level. The truth here is that bureaucrats don't love your kids. They don't know their quirks, their fears, their hearts, and they certainly don't care what the Bible says about fearing or about raising them in fearing the Lord. Okay, so in Psalm 127, verse 3, children are a heritage from the Lord, not a project for the state, not a cultural science experiment. They are your responsibility, your blessing, and your mission. Okay, but what happens if you step in and they say, you know, I'll take it from here. Okay, and what happens when you step in and say, hey, I'm actually going to take responsibility and I'm going to participate in raising my child. You show up to the school board meetings. You ask about the curriculum. You object to drag queen story hour and drag queen library story hour and all of these pornographic books in the libraries. What happens when you say, yeah, I'm going to take it from here. I'm going to start participating in my mission and my responsibility in raising up my child. You are deemed a domestic terrorist. Okay, if you start showing up and if you actually start taking responsibility over raising your child, you are dangerous to democracy. They'll say that. And they'll say that all because you just started loving your kid enough to be involved. So we've normalized this idea that parents should just hand over their kids for 8 hours a day and play catch up over a microwave dinner and try to catch up on who your kid actually is. Your kids are strangers. That's not parenting. That's outsourcing. So the product here is a generation that is anxious, that is confused, and they are spiritually hollow. What if we flipped the script? Really, what if we turned off the screens, cracked open a Bible, and actually parented the way Deuteronomy 6 tells us to parent at home and all of the time? And I think that our future of the country actually depends on this. And I hope that we start parenting like our future and like the future of the country depends on it, because it does. So don't be intimidated. God gave you those kids for a reason. Raise them up in truth, teach them real values, and never hand over this sacred duty to the folks who say remote learning is the way to go, or gender identity, you can identify as whatever the hell you want. Don't hand over that sacred duty of parenting and raising your children to people who are just wacky weirdos. You can raise your children, and you are required to raise your children because they are a gift from God, and He's bestowed a sacred duty on you as a parent. This has been Conservative Cat Clips. Hey, go ahead and smash that like button right now. Do it right now. Hit the like button and subscribe to the channel. We do want to talk about Republican Texas Governor Greg Abbott and how he completely destroyed, obliterated the governor of California, Gavin Newsom, and the Texas Democrats who fled his state. And he destroyed them with really this brutal, honest, hilarious message saying he's still got plenty of arsenal in his fight over this redistricting thing. And what he means by that really is the state of Texas, they've got plenty of room. I mean, if they wanted to add seven seats, right, Republican seats, they'd be able to, because they've got that wiggle room. States like California, states like Illinois, there's really no wiggle room where they could add more Democrat seats. Like here in the state of Illinois, we only have 3 Republican seats, and we don't have a ton of ammunition really against the Republicans at this point, because we've gerrymandered ourselves into a hole here where there is no cards left to play. So speaking to Glenn Beck on his podcast, Abbott literally laughed off Newsom, who threatened him the day before to stop his plans to vote on a new congressional map that would give Republicans 5 or more seats, or else he would somehow add 5 seats in California to nullify this move. So California Governor Gavin Newsom and Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker have talked about the potential of gerrymandering even more, right, to offset what Greg Abbott does in the state of Texas. But the problem is here that Democrats have already gerrymandered so much to benefit their party. There's really no more wiggle room to benefit their party anymore in their state. So take a listen to this podcast. Here we go.
Gavin Newsom has just demanded that you stop your redistricting efforts. He said he was going to retaliate by adding 5 more Democratic seats in California to cancel out the 5 that Texas is going to add. He said, Governor Abbott, you are not entitled to 5 congressional seats. Any response to Gavin Newsom?
Oh, my God. I'm questioning that. Yeah, break. So for one, there's so many things wrong with that. In Texas, for us to redraw congressional lines and make sure that People in Texas are going to have the ability to vote for the Republican candidate of their choice in these congressional seats. All it requires is for the governor to call a special session on it and for a majority of the Texas House and Senate to vote on it. In California, they have to go through this complex constitutional process, which really means they would not even be able to get it done.
Right.
But that point aside, if they still really wanted to get something done, it's impossible because they are so gerrymandered in the first place. They have almost eliminated all Republican members of Congress out there. And Glenn, this is the biggest issue that surfaced because of this redistricting battle. And that is, most Americans had no idea how much California, Illinois, New York, and Massachusetts had gerrymandered their states so that they had purged pretty much every Republican from the United States Congress. And so the California with Gavin Newsom, he's kind of like someone showing up to a gunfight but forgot to bring the bullets because he doesn't have any bullets to shoot in this fight, whereas Texas has plenty of bullets to shoot to make sure that we will maintain a congressional district in Texas that's going to be more Republican, more representative of the values and votes in our state, but also capable of stretching that. If we do have states like California or Illinois, whatever the case may be, if they go full scale and really rig the system the way that Gavin Newsom's talking about doing, if those rules apply, then Texas can gain more ground than California can.
Okay. So that was the Glenn Beck program. He had Governor Greg Abbott on. Greg Abbott, you replied to this question that Glenn Beck, hey, what do you say to Governor Gavin Newsom, who says that he's going to essentially try to nullify your move in Texas to add these five Republican states or congressional seats? And he said, oh my God. And then Greg Abbott breaks out in like belly laughter, which is amazing to hear. He says, give me a break. For one of there's so many things wrong with that. In Texas, for us to redraw the congressional lines and make sure that the people in Texas are going to have the ability to vote for a Republican candidate of their choice in these congressional seats, all it requires is for the governor to call a special session on it and for a majority of the Texas House and Senate to vote on it. Okay, so number one, you know, California Governor Gavin Newsom sat there and tried to say, like, he's going rogue and he has no right to do this. All it takes is for the governor to call a special session and to have a majority in the Texas House and Senate and then vote on it, damn it. Like he's doing everything within his power. This isn't like fascism and like he's not like abusing his power, okay? Newsom is the kind of, is kind of like someone who shows up to a gunfight and forgot to bring the bullets because he doesn't have any bullets to shoot in this fight. Exactly. He says that he's going to nullify the move by adding Democrat seats in California. He can't do it anymore. They gerrymandered the hell out of the state. Illinois, like I said, we have three Republican seats. They could add 6-7 seats in Texas and in Florida. They're already talking about doing it there in Florida, redistricting and adding more Republican seats. So they've got the ammunition. The Democrats do not in these blue states. Okay. So whereas Texas has plenty of bullets to shoot, to make sure that we maintain a congressional district in Texas that's going to be more Republican, more representative of the values and the votes in our state. So like I said, in Illinois, we only have three Republican congressional seats. That's Mary Miller, Darren LaHood, and Mike Bost. But yet 43% of the electorate voted Republican in the last election, okay? So 43% of Illinoisans are Republican, but yet we only have three Republican congressional seats. That makes no sense. Abbott noted that the move isn't just to ensure Republican representation in Congress for the state, but to act as a bit of a safety net in case these Democrats in these blue states like California go full scale and really rig the system in the way that Gavin Newsom is already talking about doing. So had not the Republicans fought fire with fire and done this in Texas and are now talking about doing it in Florida, had they not done this and had they just sat on their hands, I'm telling you, the blue states would have already, like, what were we supposed to do? Wait until they rigged the system and draw out Mary Miller and Mike Bost and Darren LaHood? You know, like, are we just supposed to sit by and wait for them to do that? Because they were probably going to do that anyway. And they're just kind of getting ahead of it, Texas here, to gain more ground before California can. Okay, so this, of course, comes after the Democrats fled to the state of Texas in order to deny quorum to vote on the redistricting plans. Interesting enough, they fled to states like Illinois, New York, and Democrat Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker. You know, they fled to him. They ran into his arms. And it's kind of hilarious because they're attacking Texas for their redistricting plans. But we know how bad Illinois is and has been for decades as far as gerrymandering goes. It's so bad that late night show host Stephen Colbert, okay, had to point out how insane Pritzker State of Illinois has gerrymandered to the benefit of the Democrats over the years. Like, we have a leftist, Stephen Colbert, is out there pointing out how bad this is and how insane the gerrymandering is. So, however, all this nonsense is soon to be over. I talked about this yesterday, according to NBC. The runaways, the Texas representatives, the runaways who claim to be saving democracy, they're headed back to their state early because they say that they accomplished their goal and they're claiming victory, although they are definitely defeated. And the Republicans' pressure campaign was very effective, but they're saying that they completed their goal of raising awareness surrounding gerrymandering. That's a very polite way of saying that they failed miserably. Like I said, the Republicans' pressure campaign was affected. They stopped direct deposits of their paychecks, these lawmakers' paychecks, into their bank accounts. Okay, they promised to call multiple sessions, which would have meant that they would have had to stay in Illinois for multiple sessions to keep these Texas Democrats stranded. They would have called, the Republicans would have just called special session after special session indefinitely. And that would have had to have kept the Texas Democrats there in the blue state. Otherwise, they would have had to return for quorum. They were incurring daily fines. And, you know, these legislators are not independently wealthy, although they do get a lot of money from the donor class, probably the donor class to fix their fines or to deal with the fines that they were getting. But at the end of the day, the donor class probably would have caught on that, hey, this is a dead end and we're kind of funding a dead end. That money would have dried up. So they had no other place to turn other to go home, the Texas Democrats. So they're going home early. I don't know if they're going to go home this week, probably, if I had to guess. So it's really nice to see the Republicans go on the offense when it comes to this stuff. All right, I've got another story and then we'll wrap it up. But I don't like going after kids. You know, Teddy Pritzker, Governor J.B. Pritzker has some kids. I really don't like going after the kids of elected officials. Barron Trump and Ella Emhoff, they live pretty much non-political lives, okay? They don't get into politics, so they aren't, you know, on the chopping block, and they're not, you know, subject to my scrutiny. Hope Walls, however, Tampon Tim's son, or daughter, sorry, Freudian slip, no, Tampon Tim's daughter wants to be a TikTok influencer, and she has thrusted herself into the political spotlight, okay? So my rule of leaving kids alone is going to be temporarily suspended for Hope Walls always, because she has thrusted herself multiple times into the spotlight. And she wants to be a TikTok influencer, so of course I'm going to scrutinize everything she does. And to be frank with you, she's very annoying. She does this really annoying Valley Girl thing where at the end of every sentence, she kind of like does like an inflection, you know, as if she's asking a question. And I absolutely can't stand that. I hate Valley Girls. like, I'm asking a question. You know, I can't stand it. She drives me nuts. So we're going to play this clip because here she's calling Trump a bitch, a baby bitch, and she's attacking him for responding to the crime-ridden cesspool that is our nation's capital. And she manages to work in like racism and, of course, this leftist talking point that crime is actually down 30%. And they're not actually, like I pointed out with the Chicago crime statistics, They're not actually like counting the bodies, right? The medical examiner in Chicago, he's got 323 bodies on the slab and their cause of death is pending. Year to date, we have 240 murders in Chicago in 2025. So, and they say, oh, that's down by like 30% from the previous year. Yeah, well, you guys aren't counting the bodies on the slabs, you know, the 320 some bodies on the slabs, their cause of death is pending. If you counted all those, then the murder rate would be higher, right? So I am going to share this clip with you. This is of Hope Walls. And she worked in that talking point of crimes. Actually, it's down by 30%. Yeah, give me a break. You guys are lying about the crime statistics. And like the metric I go off of is, what do people say? Are people saying they're afraid to walk in Washington, D.C. at night? What are people's real life experiences? That's a more accurate, I'd say, measurement of what's going on in D.C. as far as the crime goes, rather than like actual statistics. Like, what are people actually dealing with on the ground there? Let's take a listen to Hope Walls. Here we go. Sorry to subject this to you.
Okay, so on the topic of book talk, as well as Trump's bitch baby wussy scaredy cat behavior in D.C., it got me thinking of a book I read in college. I think it was when I was at the University of Minnesota. It was Locking Up Our Own by James Forman Jr. And it talks about what led to, arguably, you should also read The New Jim Crow and then go into this one along with like a million in between. But that's just one, two. You kind of get it. But like modern mass incarceration of like Black men. And it talks about DC and the war on drugs and how all of that led up to what we're now seeing. Also note, the crime rate in DC is at the lowest it's been in 30 years. But this is a good book to kind of get like a larger viewpoint of this sort of stuff. And it's always been like one form of another of like the US locking up people that aren't like rich and white and men. And like we're very much seeing that continuation go on. I would argue also with what we see with Trump, it's just like more of it. Yeah, go read that book. This was not worded very well, but it's a really good book. But start with The New Jim Crow, because that's just like the most basic level reading of that stuff.
My head hurts. I didn't even really understand. Apparently she wants me to go read this book. And, you know, I'm quite frankly, I'm not going to go read this book. You know, it's not that deep. What's going on in DC, there's crime and it's rampant. And Donald Trump using his federal authority, being that the DC area is under federal jurisdiction, he's going to combat crime by deploying the National Guard. It's not that deep. You don't need to read a book about it, okay? Or read books about this. It's really not all that deep. Also, another thing, I don't know if it's just me, but notice how she has like an H here on her necklace. Is it just me, or do liberals always wear jewelry that has their name, either their name, their full-blown name, or an initial, like their first initial or their, you know, last name initial or whatever? For some odd reason, I feel like it's a liberal thing. I don't know. Throw it in the comment section. Have you noticed that? All my liberal friends, they all have necklaces. These feminists, they all have necklaces with either their full-blown name or their initial. And I've never had a piece of jewelry that had my name on it. I just feel like it's very self-absorbed and maybe like a little conceited. Why do you need your name around your neck? You know, like you're not that great. Right. I don't know. It's just, maybe it's an odd take that I have, but if anybody buys me jewelry that has my initial on it, I just kind of like get skeeved out a little bit. I'm just like, I won't wear it because it's just, it feels self-absorbed. Anyway, the only necklaces I wear usually are cross necklaces. I'm not a big jewelry person either. So maybe that's why I don't like them. I just can't stand the the letter of your name being on your chest is just so weird to me. Maybe I'm a weirdo, I don't know. But no one in the history of politics is better than baiting their opponents than President Donald Trump. Okay, so he is just completely baiting the libs here with this whole DC thing. He could say that the sky is blue, and then you would have the left screaming about how the color blue is racist and how the sky actually identifies as magenta, and how dare Donald Trump call the sky blue. So this week, President Donald Trump has said that Washington, D.C. is a crime-ridden cesspool. And the left and the media, they have said, no, it's not. And then they'll, you know, dig up their pie chart and they'll say, if you take a look over here to my left, actually, you know, crime is down 30%. Even the Morning Joe, yes, that Morning Joe, he can see that this is a trap. He was actually on Trump's side here, saying that, hey, it's a trap for leftists. Leftists are falling into this trap. Let's take a listen to what the Morning Joe said. That Morning Joe, about Donald Trump's little tactic here. Let's take a listen.
And the murder rate. You can't keep saying violent crime is down, but the murder rate's up. To the average person, the murder rate's about life and death. You don't brag about a rising murder rate. And the Democrats are, I agree with you, Mika, they're falling into the trap of defending what's indefensible.
It's a trap. Yes, it's a trap. I mean, if it's not a winner politically to say, oh, you're wrong, look at the data. Because, you know, if one violent crime happens in a very heavily populated part of the city, people hear about it and it's visceral. They don't want it. And they'll gravitate to the person who appears to be doing something about it.
And the murder rate, you can't keep saying violent crime is down.
Okay. There you have it. So cheers to Hope Walls. She has joined the legions of the awful TikTokers who are playing their part in making Trump look awesome. When you say, oh, well, actually, look at these data points. You know, thank you for your service, Hope, because you are making Trump look very, very good. Anytime the left comes out and says, actually, it's not a crime-ridden cesspool, people have to chuckle. Because people who live there, people who visit there, they know that it is a crime-ridden cesspool. So I will see you tomorrow morning, bright and early. I appreciate you being here. Be sure to subscribe to the channel. Tampon Tim's Daughter is painful to listen to. Very dumb, very low IQ. And I don't like going after these politicians' kids because they don't really, you know, sign up for this. They're just kids. But Hope, she wants to be a TikTok influencer. So therefore, I am going to scrutinize and blast her. And I really don't like the whole Valley Girl thing. Like, if you notice, she uses that inflection all the time at the end of her sentences. And it's a Valley Girl thing. And I can't stand that. So for that alone, I am going to blast her. I will see you tomorrow morning, bright and early, 6 a.m. And don't worry, we will have Dave Paul Blumenschein on the show. He is at the Illinois Republican today. Republican Day at the State Fair, and there is all kinds of things I got to ask him, specifically about Kathy Salvey resigning as the Illinois GOP chair. She plans to resign. Could she stay in until a new State Central Committee is seated? I will be sure to ask him that. You won't want to miss tomorrow's show, 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. Bye-bye. Love you so much.